the draft 2018 triennial review of the Basin Plan and the Basin Plan Work Plan for fiscal year 2018 through 2021. We have Ms. Alita Mangelsdorf. Good morning.
Good morning, Chairman Noren and the rest of the board. My name is Alita Mangelsdorf. I'm the chief of our Planning and Watershed Stewardship Division, and I'm here today to present a workshop on the 2018 triennial review of our Basin Plan. The staff report and draft planning program work plan and adopting resolution are out for public comment right now, so this workshop is during the period of public comment. So today we have about 45 minutes to go over the full array of projects that we've been working on as a result of the 2014 training review and an update of their status and projection of what our recommendations are for the 2018 to 2021 work plan. I'll go over an introduction, provide a status of the 2014 projects, present the 2018 draft triennial review planning program work plan and describe what I mean by that. I'll go over the review and decision-making process and schedule for this item, and then review the draft adopting resolution. There's a couple of interesting things in there that I'd like to draw your attention to. The purpose of the workshop really is just to introduce the draft staff report and the triennial review planning program work plan and adopting resolution to help answer any clarifying questions and to hear preliminary comments. The hearing itself isn't scheduled until September. So I'm going to start with an introduction, and I'm going to hearken back to 1949 when the Dickey Act was passed, the Dickey Water Pollution Control Act, which established the 9 regional water boards. Sometime after that, in 1967, the State Water Board was established, and one of their first actions was to adopt Resolution 6816, which is our anti-degradation policy. Following that, the legislature enacted the Port of Cologne Water Quality Control Act, and that's the act that required that the regional boards develop water quality control plans, and that in those plans we establish water quality objectives, which are designed to protect beneficial uses, and develop a program of implementation to implement those objectives. On a similar track, the federal government was undergoing a process of developing regulations in the same manner. The Federal Water Pollution Control Act of 1940 was established in 1948. There was a very large revision to that act in 1972, which we know as the Clean Water Act. And the requirements of the Clean Water Act paralleled very nicely, in fact, were modeled to some degree on the Port of Cologne requirements here in California that had been adopted in 1969. And the Clean Water Act specifically requires the development of water quality standards, which are described in similar terms as to the requirements under Port of Cologne. That is, that we are to designate uses and establish water quality criteria which protect those uses and include an anti-degradation policy. Those are the components of water quality standards. So for our purposes, Port of Cologne describes beneficial uses, and that's comparable to the federal government's use of the term designated uses. And we talk about water quality objectives, whereas the federal act talks about water quality criteria. In both cases, Port of Cologne requires that we periodically review the basin plan and update it as necessary, and the Clean Water Act is a little more prescriptive and describes a triennial review period, so every 3-year review of the basin plan. On the state level, we adopt a number of different water quality control plans. There are statewide plans, which include, for example, the Ocean Plan, Inland Surface Waters Plan, and the Bays and Estuaries Plan. These are plans that are applied statewide, and where there are requirements in those plans that are for constituents or matters identical to a regional plan, then they generally supersede. And then each of the regional boards adopts its own regional water quality control plan. So we've done that here in the North Coast. We've had a plan since the early 1970s. And we had two plans actually in the early 1970s, which were combined in the single plan that we now implement. And that plan is divided into chapters. Chapter one is the introduction to our region, statistics about our region, and the goals of the plan itself. Chapter two describes the beneficial uses of water that apply in this region. And Table 2-1 of that chapter designates specific uses per water body. Chapter 3 includes our water quality objectives. These are numeric and narrative objectives that describe the conditions necessary to protect the beneficial uses of our region. And it also includes a section that describes our anti-degradation policy, meaning the State Board's Resolution 6816. And then Chapter 4 is our program of implementation. It includes prohibitions and action plans, policies, and implementation plans. And these are all the mechanisms that we use to implement our water quality objectives. It's actually Chapter 6, which includes a description of our monitoring program. In a non-substantive revision of a few years ago, we actually removed the language of Chapter 5, which included a description of statewide policies because they were so badly out of date, and we instead refer the reader to the State Board's website for those for accurate, up-to-date information. And as I say, we generally review this basin plan on a triennial basis, which is as required under the Clean Water Act and as recommended by Porter Cologne. So that's just by way of background of how it is we have a basin plan and the obligation to review it every 3 years. And that brings us up to the last triennial review, which was conducted in 2014. And as part of that exercise, we established a relatively long list of projects that are needed to update the basin plan, and chose the ranked them in priority order, and chose the top priority projects to assign staff to. So what I'm going to do now is just quickly go through the high priority projects that were identified in 2014 for the use of our staff resources, and give you a quick summary of where we're at on them. Most of them are being pushed over into the 2018 Planning Program Work Plan, and I'll describe in more detail whatever modifications to the project descriptions that we have cooked up for you. We divide the high priority projects into two categories. The TMDL projects are all sort of lumped together as the first high priority, and then following those are other non-TMDL planning projects. So with respect to TMDLs, we have the Russian River Pathogen TMDL. As you know, this was meant actually to go to hearing last December, and we chose to postpone it because of the fires. We're working now on our responses to comments. We've slowed our work down as a result of the fire and as a result of postponing the hearing. But we're very close to finishing that work, and essentially now we're waiting for the State Board to adopt bacteria objectives that will be the foundational support for that TMDL. We also are working on the Laguna de Santa Rosa TMDLs. This is for phosphorus, dissolved oxygen, sediment, and temperature. So we've been working diligently on that. We've had a pause on the technical development because of some contract issues, but we've been in lieu of that work doing a lot of early implementation work, and including development of water quality trading program and work with partners on restoration planning, et cetera. We've made a lot of progress on a pathogen TMDL that addresses impairments on ocean beaches and other freshwater streams in the region. The data has all been collected, and analysis is now underway with our partners at the Sonoma County Public Health Lab and the Humboldt County Public Health Lab. This TMDL will combine, as I say, develop a program of implementation that addresses impairments in an array of streams. So it includes five impaired freshwater streams in Trinidad, Mad River, and the Eureka Plain hydrologic units. It also will address pathogen impairments on ocean beaches in the Trinidad, Mad River, Mendocino Coast, and Bodega hydrologic units. The other planning projects include an update to water quality, the water quality objectives chapter, chapter 3 of our basin plan. And we've completed that project that was adopted in this last triennial review period. We have been working on the development of exemption criteria for a seasonal for our seasonal point source discharge prohibition in the Eel River. We've been working with the city of Fortuna on that project, and they've had delays in their own scientific work. We have a project which is to designate ONRWs with a focus on the Smith River. We began with some stakeholder outreach in Del Norte County and have taken a pause on that project as a result of significant stakeholder input. We have a project which is to develop a groundwater protection policy. This is phase two, which is associated with the water quality objectives update, which was phase one. And essentially the idea is with the water quality objectives update, one of the components of that project was to adopt a groundwater toxicity objective. And phase two is to focus in on programs of implementation specific to groundwater protection. We also have a project to develop flow objectives for the Navarro River. We have a three-phase process to develop those objectives, and we are in the middle now of the first phase of that process. And finally, on the 2014 triennial review list was the development of a policy to address climate change. And we've had delays in this project for a number of reasons, but primarily related to reassignment to accomplish the ELK TMDL. So that brings us up to 2018. The notion for this triennial review is to establish the workload of the planning program for the fiscal year period of 2018 through to the end of June 2021. The planning program work plan that we've put together is a slightly different approach to laying out the priorities as compared to the 2014, and I'll describe this in a moment. But basically, the concept is the same, that we're looking through the lens of our agency's mission, healthy watersheds, effective regulation, and strong partnership, as a mechanism of prioritizing all of the projects that have come to our attention and need for the need to update the basin plan, and have identified the top priorities that we think best accomplish, set us on a course to accomplish this mission. Just to review what the resources we have available in our planning program, we have two TMDL staff. These are staff that are dedicated specifically to the development of TMDL work. And then we have 2.7 planning staff, so three people, 2.7 PYs. There are also four specialists in our office, and a couple of these specialists are working diligently on some of the priorities from 2014. And periodically, we bring in other program staff as needed when a project requires expertise from the perspective of a given program. So this is what the draft planning program work plan looks like. And what we've done this time around is try to estimate the number of PYs associated with the effort in each of these project areas. And we've divided them over the course of these next 3 years, and three fiscal years. Behind this work plan is a spreadsheet, of course, which has the actual staff and the number of PYs for each of those staff in the efforts that they apply to a variety of projects. So you won't see whole. You won't necessarily see whole numbers, and you won't see, for example, that we throw a 3 PY the first year at any given project with the intent to complete it by the end of the year. So the effort is spread out over time, and this is in recognition of the staff that we have, their expertise, and the phases that apply to the development of any of these projects. So this is the list of the TMDL projects that are on the planning program work plan. I'm going to go over each one in a little bit more detail in a moment. I just wanted to show you them in, you know, sort of on the page, how they look in the work plan itself. And these are the projects that are the non-TMDL projects.
Question on that table. What are the underlined numbers?
Yeah, there are. There's a long series of footnotes to explain a variety of things going on here. The underlined numbers, in particular, are PYs associated with non-planning program staff. So these are folks outside of the planning unit that we will pull in to help us with the work.
Okay, thank you.
And that includes, by the way, the specialists that are working on specific projects. So, for example, we have a groundwater protection specialist who is the lead on our groundwater protection strategy development. Okay. And the same with our flow and riparian specialist who is the lead on our flow project. So in the 2018 to 2021 planning program work plan, we've included ongoing work on some of the 2014 projects. We've modified our vision on some of the 2014 projects. There are a couple of new projects, and there's one project that we're going to propose we drop from our focus this next three-year period. So back to the TMDLs. The Russian River pathogen TMDL is poised to be completed. We'd like to complete that this fiscal year. That's a 2014 project, and we anticipate that will be done shortly. Calendar year. We also would like to add a new project to our TMDL list, which is the development of, or what I'm calling a TMDL program retrospective review. The notion here is that we've been in the business of TMDL development and implementation for about 20 years now, and this seems like a good opportunity to take a pause and to assess how effective that program has been at actually restoring water quality. This is a project that we anticipate drawing in program staff from other programs. It'll involve certainly some data analysis, looking at water quality data in individual watersheds, assessing the individual action plans where those exist, and where we've been applying, for example, a sediment TMDL implementation policy or the temperature implementation policy, assessing how we're implementing those policies in individual permits or waivers, and how effective that appears to be. The outcome of this review will likely be a list of recommendations associated with any number of things, but including perhaps updates to given action plans or updates to given implementation policies, perhaps recommendations associated with requirements and permits that we issue, ways in which we collect and manage data, et cetera. I also wanted to make the point that the two other TMDLs that we're working on, we have begun to think in slightly different terms than they were originally designed. And that is largely in part due to the fact that the EPA has sort of re-envisioned the federal TMDL program and have begun to recognize that on a nationwide scale, they also have a lot of TMDLs, technical TMDLs developed that maybe have not been implemented. And they're recognizing that the success of the TMDL program really hangs on full implementation of those action plans. And California is a place where we actually do develop action plans to implement them. So we're ahead of many other states in that regard. But with one of the things that's come out of EPA's review on a nationwide level is that they would like to be able to entice other states to begin implementing work. And one of the ways they've done that is by crafting something they've called an alternative restoration plan, or a TMDL alternative. And the idea is to use whatever implementation authority one has to begin implementing actions under the umbrella of a restoration plan, an alternative restoration plan, and then see if that can have success in correcting impairments. This is an approach that we regularly take in Port au Cologne, gives us authority to do already. We can establish action plans to correct water quality impairments in a watershed without a TMDL as it is. But EPA's new direction has given us sort of the inspiration to perhaps revision both the Laguna TMDL and the Ocean Beaches and Freshwater Streams Pathogen TMDL as possible candidates for this alternative approach. And the idea is that there's very good evidence in the Laguna that we have there's a lot of work that could be accomplished by the early mechanisms that we've been developing in the Water Quality Trading Program and many of our other partners with, for example, the Water Agency and a grant they're implementing to develop a master restoration plan for the Laguna. Our involvement in developing a regional monitoring program for the Russian River, including the Laguna. All of these are components of a watershed stewardship and adaptive management framework that shows great promise on improving water quality conditions and may not rely on the development of waste load and load allocations in a TMDL equation. We're still evaluating exactly what the components of an alternative plan might be for the Laguna, but I mentioned that in this next 3-year period, that is one of the key things that we will be trying to draw a conclusion on. And the same is true about the Ocean Beaches and the Freshwater Streams Pathogen TMDL project. The work that we're doing in that project is comparable to what we've done in the Russian River and the Pathogen TMDL that will soon be coming before you. And our thinking is that the implementation program for the Russian River will be similar to what we would propose for these other impaired water bodies. And it, for example, relies on the county and their local agency management plans for the management of on-site waste treatment systems. And so that we would rely on a similar program for these other water bodies, which we then could describe perhaps as an alternative restoration plan. So again, in this next 3-year period, you'll be that is something that will be coming. We'll be investigating in more detail and be able to say more about the next time we give you an update. So on to the non-TMDL projects. We continue to work on a groundwater protection policy. This really has been re-envisioned from a narrowly defined as a policy and more broadly defined as a groundwater protection strategy. As the vision for this project has expanded, you know, essentially what we're looking at is the development of a groundwater protection program in this office that looks more broadly than just at spills and cleanups. We've been investigating the use of existing groundwater data to do basin-wide assessments. We still have an interest in statewide application of statewide policies and regional planning, and I'll describe in a minute the basin plan components of this sort of revisioned project. Data-driven adaptive management and partnering are all key parts of the development of this larger strategy. As I said earlier, this project is developed and managed by our groundwater specialist, and we have a groundwater team that is supporting the work of the specialist. Also on the work plan is we would propose continuing our work on the development of flow objectives for the Navarro River. In the status on the 2014 projects, we're in phase one of a 3-phase process. But in addition to the work we're doing in the Navarro, we have the flow and riparian specialist managing this project, and he, with the help of our flow team, have also been investigating the development of a regional objective, have been looking into such questions as what the relationship is between flow and dissolved oxygen as a potential mechanism for assessing or establishing flow thresholds. And so there are a variety of other mechanisms or techniques that we're looking at in addition to the specific work we're doing under contract in the Navarro. And then with respect to climate change, we would propose we continue work on this project. We have modified our vision of this as well. It was originally described as a climate change adaptation policy, a project to develop a policy in the Basin Plan. And in discussions with the State Board and their climate change staff, we've become convinced that there's a lot of work that we could be doing in the realm of climate change more immediately than would than the development of a policy allows us to do. And that is in the form of outreach and permit requirements and enforcement work. And so we've re-envisioned our climate change policy project to be thinking more in terms of a strategy for climate change. And the basis for our strategy, we think, will begin with the development of landscape assessment tools that will help us to develop potential water quality impacts associated with climate change, look at different places on the landscape that are uniquely vulnerable to climate change under various climate scenarios. And on the flip side, look at places on the landscape, identify places on the landscape that are uniquely resilient under different future climate change scenarios. So the idea is that in this next triennial review period, we would apply our staff resources to development of a landscape assessment tool, or really what would be a toolbox, a collection of a number of different existing and soon-to-be-developed tools. We would conduct our region-wide assessments. I think this might, for example, Mr. Bedoya, get at the question of prioritization, help us to understand under different climate scenarios what watersheds are uniquely at risk or uniquely resilient, and that as a mechanism to help us essentially prioritize where we put our work. And from this assessment, we think that there will be an opportunity to provide recommendations associated with permit requirements, provide some technical assistance, especially to some of our disadvantaged communities that won't have perhaps the ability to do a lot of analysis of their own in planning for climate change. And then, of course, there's the potential for the development of policy language itself that would come before you as a basin plan amendment. You'll recall in 2014 that we began work on developing an outstanding national resource water designation with a focus initially on the Smith River. We went to Del Norte with that suggestion and had a very robust stakeholder input. And the result was that we got some clear feedback that we need to do the work to establish an ONRW in our basin plan and define clearly what an ONRW is and what it accomplishes and what the implications are of designating water as an ONRW. We don't in the state have any such thing in a basin plan. The existing ONRWs that we have in the state were developed through lawsuit, and so there isn't a clear basin plan language, and so we would be creating that from scratch. The other feedback that we got from Del Norte was that there are a lot of waters in the North Coast region that would potentially be eligible for ONRW designation, and they were really keen to see a more objective process for establishing ONRW eligible waters rather than focus immediately on the Smith River. So the landscape assessment tool that we're proposing to develop, we think is responsive to this comment, that it would allow us to, on a very objective basis, identify those elements or those areas in the in the region that are potentially uniquely resilient to climate change and could be good candidates for ONRW designation, assuming that ONRW designation is a tool that we want to employ for that purpose. So following the development of revisions to Chapter 3, which we think we can accomplish in this next triennial review period, and following the development of our landscape assessment tool and an assessment of potentially resilient locations in the region, we would begin a stakeholder process to establish the protocol for Chapter 4 to be included in Chapter 4 for ONRW designation and a list of candidates that come out of our assessment process. One of the new projects we'd like to propose for this next triennial review period is to work on our biostimulatory substances objective. This is a project that's actually been on the triennial review list for a couple of cycles now, but it just hasn't risen up in priority. We've been doing a lot of work on addressing algal blooms in the summers of the last many, many years, and really have some quite a bit of experience in that now. And it's become clear that our biostimulatory substances objective would do a better job of supporting the effort to control algal blooms, in particular cyanotoxin concerns, if it addressed instead biostimulatory conditions. And what we mean by that is to, rather than focus solely on nutrients as a cause of algal blooms, instead look at the variety of factors, including temperature and flow and sedimentation, that also contribute to a water body having the habitat necessary for excessive algal blooms. And this is, we think, is a relatively straightforward project, something that we can complete within this triennial review period. Another new project is the cultural beneficial use and tribal subsistence beneficial use and non-tribal subsistence beneficial uses. These are uses that have been established by the state with a recent adoption at the state board. We, in our region, already have cultural beneficial uses established, and we also have subsistence fishing as a beneficial use in our basin plan. But the definitions that the state board has adopted are slightly different than the ones in our basin plan. So we need to go through an effort to compare the two, to replace the existing Region 1 definitions with the new statewide definitions, and then to reassess the designations that have been made under the Region 1 designations and determine whether they can be redesignated under the new definitions. And as part of that process, we anticipate probably adding new designations as we work with tribes. And finally, that brings me to the exemption criteria for the seasonal discharge prohibition, which applies in the Eel River. This is a project which was proposed the last triennial review by the City of Fortuna. And they've had delays in their own scientific work necessary to support the development of this project. And so that, coupled with our sort of early assessment that really the discharge of highly treated waste to the Eel River, which was initially thought as a potentially good idea if we could show that there were flow augmentation benefits that resulted, hasn't really panned out to be likely the case. So these two factors have lead us to suggest that we drop this project from our staffing for this next triennial review period, and potentially take it up again in the future. The City of Fortuna makes greater progress, but not assign a staff to this at this point. So that brings me up to where we are in our review and decision-making process. The draft documents, which are the staff report, the draft planning program work plan, and the adopting resolution, all went out for a public comment period on May 5th. It's a 45-day public comment period, and we'll close on June 22nd. This public workshop is meant as an opportunity to hear feedback and to answer clarifying questions in advance of the written comments being due in June. And then a public hearing would be scheduled for September 6th. I wanted to say a few words about the adopting resolution. It isn't always the case that we would include a draft adopting resolution with the triennial review itself as it's out for public review, but we've had an idea with this adopting resolution that we thought was worthy of getting a comment on, and that is that there are a number of big issues that are slow to address through the basin planning process, and we wanted to offer the board an opportunity to make what are called policy statements on some of these large topics. A policy statement is authorized in Puerto Colón. It's a statement of the board, a statement of opinion of the board. It doesn't have regulatory effect, but it is can be offered in the spirit of directing staff. And what we've done with this adopting resolution, draft resolution, is highlight four key areas that we think are worthy of some direction from the board. Those are climate change, contaminants of emerging concern, water conservation, and groundwater protection. Climate change for obvious reasons. Contaminants of emerging concern because this is a topic that we've had brought before the board many, many times over the last few years, have done some preliminary work with our Russian River study, and there's clear interest to develop a better understanding of the potential impacts due to CECs, but not yet any criteria upon which to base permit requirements, for example. Water conservation, obviously because of the experience of drought and the concerns that we've had in this region with curtailments and such, and groundwater protection as we develop our groundwater program. So I'll just say one more thing about this, that we, for the climate change piece, really comes directly from the State Board's own resolution on climate change. The State Board adopted a resolution which directed its own staff to do a list of things associated with climate change, and it made a number of recommendations to the regional board. And so the language that you'll see in the draft adopting resolution includes, it really comes directly from the State Board's own resolution. We've taken those pieces that are recommendations to the regional board, essentially put them in the regional board's mouth as an opportunity to direct your own staff to do these key things. The same is true of the water conservation language, same is generally true of the water conservation language, that the governor's declaration on water conservation as a way of life offered a platform for establishing some just key direction to staff on incorporating water conservation as a requirement and given in permits. And contaminants of emerging concern and groundwater protection also come from statewide work and the results of scientific panels. So I eagerly await your review of this language. Would love to get feedback on the specific language, the topics, and if there are any other topics that you have an interest in, and the idea generally of a policy statement as being a mechanism for you're in a more sort of quick manner offering direction to staff on issues of key importance. With that, I will close. There's all this information on our website, and people are free to contact me anytime with questions. And we are looking to receive comments, written comments, June 22nd, and there's an email address that people can submit comments to. And with that, I'd love to hear questions or comments.
Thank you, Lita, very much. Well done. I'll remind people, if you want to address the this issue, please fill out a speaker card. Board questions? Mitten Quinto.
Thank you. I have a couple comments. The first is just great work on this. I love the concept of incorporating policy statements in this way. I think it's a really efficient way of giving some additional direction to staff. So I appreciate that. And I think that there are some really exciting programs on this list, particularly or projects, the TMDL retrospective and some of the alternative TMDL stuff. I'm really excited to see that move forward and work on those items. I shared this with you as staff earlier this week and want to say it out loud here with the rest of the board. In the past, I have stated concerns about the level of ambition of our triennial review and basin planning priorities. And in this case, I really appreciate this sort of table at the end, attachment one, the work plan layout, and really kind of enumerating how all of this could get done among existing staff. but I also know how things go and how some of these efforts end up taking on a life of their own and taking more staff time. I know that the staff report here, I think, fairly and accurately pointed out a couple of different times how the Elk River TMDL really absorbed a lot of staff time that would have been dedicated to basin planning efforts, and you know, that won't be a factor moving forward. But still, I have concerns about the level of ambition of this. And the item that I pick out on this list that I see as potentially less impactful than some of the other items and less essential than some of these other items is the ONRW work. And so I would just kind of offer that up in the discussion as a preliminary comment for other board members to consider and comment on if you're interested in doing so, that, you know, whether we should be looking at paring back this list a little bit to make sure that this work can really be accomplished.
Thank you. Other board questions? Mr. Gisi?
Thank you. Thank you, Alita, for a very comprehensive overview. I don't know if you're in the room earlier when I said I was going to revisit a topic that came to my attention when I was reviewing our first agenda item today, and that was the Grayton community permit. And in it, what struck me is that in the permit, we defined the wet season on a calendar basis. And I think as it relates to effective regulation and how we're trying to address climate change in a real sense, I think something that we should consider, and I don't know if it's the basin plan or I'm not sure if it's in this, but I think a wet season should be defined by a time when it's wet and not necessarily by a calendar. So particularly when we talk about putting recycled water into receiving waters, I think it's again, for, you know, and this last year was a great example. On paper, it was fairly normal, whatever that is anymore. But our rain came very late, and it was not wet in October. So I think, in terms of being effective in our regulatory approach and to be adaptive, somehow we need some language that recognizes that our weather patterns are not as predictable, maybe, as they once were, and so keep the wet weather calendar dates in place, but recognize that just because it's October 1st doesn't mean it's wet. Mm-hmm. And particularly as it relates to receiving waters flow, as it relates not only to climate change, but also to biostimulatory substances, flow is a way of diluting some of this recycled water. So I'd like to see language that recognizes that each receiving water could be different in terms of flow, Del Norte County versus Sonoma, and that somehow over time we develop flow requirements for these receiving waters that aren't simply based on calendar dates, mm-hmm. but actually the reality of the moment, the reality of the season, and the reality of what we're dealing with. So I think that's, again, getting back to this notion of effective regulation, I think we'd look silly and saying, well, gee, it's October 1st, go ahead and start putting water in that creek, and mm-hmm. the creek very well could be dry. So I think that's a consideration I'd ask you to consider. As far as the ONRW, I'm in agreement with Valerie on this. So I'm up to whatever the board wants to do on that, but I'm in agreement with her. But thank you.
I agree, too, on the climate change issue of the wet season, that we need to just go through and make sure that there's a different definition than by date. The thing about the policy statement in the resolutions, I'd like to see them our words. I don't see much value copying wording directly out of the board's higher ups and just dropping them in, because people can find that. I think it should be our interpretation and our philosophy and wording on those statements. Otherwise, we leave them out because this doesn't add any value because they're already documented somewhere. And also, you mentioned about the, today we've talked about how we just need to get things implemented, and EPA wants things implemented. And one of the big barriers to implementation in our region, of course, is the disadvantaged communities. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to actually see that issue brought up somewhere in our work planning. How are we going to address implementation in a region with so many disadvantaged communities? Otherwise, none of this will get done. We'll have a lot of paper and nothing gets worked on. So that's I'd like to see that in the work plan. And I agree with Valerie. It seems a little ambitious on this work plan. I've worked on a lot of projects, and you get on a project and this vortex is created, and pretty soon everyone's sucked up to it, into it. I think we need to get to the point where it's not ideal, but we don't have to have the most perfect document and the most perfect project. We have to get to a good enough standard and move on and do other stuff. Otherwise, we're going to have these single projects suck up all our time and resources, and we're not going to get a wide variety of projects done. So I don't know. That's just a management style. We like rein in the amount of time we're going to spend on it and just move on. The only other thing, when I was reading through, this is just a nitpicky, when I was reading through the plan, when it's printed out in black and white, I couldn't actually find the headings. I couldn't go and read through the headings. They're like 2.23. It needs to be like big, bold, underlined or something. So I had to go through and highlight them all. So nitpicky one on that one.
No, it's a good observation.
Not for my old eyes, man. That's good. Hey, can I jump in here for a minute? So for one, a realization that triennial review is a way to look forward and a way to look back, right? There's things that are ongoing here. Some of these high-priority projects are engaged, something like the Navarro Flow Study. Yes, it's a couple years in, but I believe it's an eight-year project. So it remains a high priority. It dedicates out of, I believe, as you said, the flow specialist staff person is working out there. And in fact, I believe there was recent meetings that I believe, Hector, you went to some of those, which thank you very much. So realizing that this list is a working list of things going forward and things that we have started from behind, right? And I think that's important to realize here. With respect, ONRW has been brought up here a couple times. The linking of the ONRW work with respect to climate policy, because it is linked in there to use some of that baseline information. My own perception of ONRW the last time around was that it was an idea that wasn't really well defined. We jumped on it a little bit and said, yeah, that sounds like a great idea. The Smith River is beautiful. I even brought up the Salmon River because I had recently been up the Salmon, and it just blows your mind to be up in those kinds of watersheds. At the same time, we're ill-defined to make regulatory process, which I think you allude to, Alita. I think if we're going to do ONRW in any form, we need to have a well-defined process that's transparent and well thought, because it does have very big implications. I believe that could have been or probably was part of the stakeholder reaction that was out there, and I believe that you experienced that. So if ONRW is retained here, I think first and foremost I'd like to see some real thought and discussion go around how that is going to be done. How is it defined? What's the legal implications? What's the stakeholder input? What's the outcomes and what's the inputs and outputs and what's the outcomes? Because I think we have to define that well, given the potential legality and some of the outcomes of ONRW designation. That's a very big step. As far as also, I totally support groundwater protection policy retaining as a high priority project. I think that's spot on. As far as the policy statements here, with respect to, say, like a groundwater protection policy, I think that we ought to found policy statements, they're non-regulatory statements, I believe, right? They are, in essence, a philosophical policy statement here. And I believe that if we do that, I'm not opposed to that. I do agree with Board Member Gant that we ought to put it in our words. At the same time, I think it ought to be based in fact. I have made comments in the past that I believe our groundwater protection really comes from, in my opinion, a point of view of anti-degradation. We are blessed with high-quality groundwater here, and that we are therefore bound by state and federal law to protect that groundwater. At the same time, the policy statement that comes out of that would codify it. But at the same time, it is based in large part in anti-degradation. And I think if we do those types of statements, we base it first and foremost in fact, because I think we all base ourselves in law and fact here, and then we then provide our own points of view or our own policy statements from this board. And I think keep that in mind looking forward to something like groundwater protection policy, water conservation, or others. I'm not opposed to the policy statements here. I think that they're a good rough draft first start. One thing, could you explain to me, so the Laguna TMDL in particular has been potentially put up as a vision project. And the vision project, it looks to me like that's out of EPA looking at how some of these TMDLs can actually be done. Can you just take a moment and describe the vision project and what that would mean, say, for Laguna TMDL? I know that Dave Kuzmarn and others have been early implementation out there in a very big way. What does that mean, though? Vision statement doesn't necessarily, or a vision project, I should say, doesn't necessarily have, it doesn't have to have load allocations. But in the Laguna in particular, Lita, it's non-point in a lot of ways, but at the same time, we are regulating the city of Santa Rosa on a point source discharge in Windsor, where without the absence, and I'm not saying that you're not, that there wouldn't be load allocations here, but we have gone a long ways down the path with dischargers, especially POTW dischargers to the Laguna system, that there's an expectation there would be load allocations. So what would that mean?
So the EPA's vision is multi-pronged. So what I described was kind of the opening of their TMDL regulations, which is narrowly focused on what a TMDL is, what a total maximum daily load is, how you develop that calculation, the waste load allocations, numeric targets, et cetera. They've expanded on that idea to be focused, to now be looking towards how to implement them, looking at alternative ways of implementing them. The vision itself, we've been asked to identify a vision project, which is now something that they're going to track. This is, and so on, there's an administrative end here. EPA has asked each of the regions to identify their vision, their TMDL vision project. They're going to track them in their nationwide database. They're tracked on a stream reach pollutant pair basis. And we're obligated then to deliver our plan by 2022.
Right.
And for the Laguna, we originally identified the Laguna as our vision, our vision project, because at the time that we were asked to identify our vision project, the vision itself was not all that well defined, and there was a promise that there was likely more federal funding going to be available for projects that were identified as an EPA vision project. EPA generally has had, we have made great use of a contract that they've had with Tetra Tech for technical development on TMDLs over the years, and that contract is no longer available to us because those monies were originally designed to support projects under that watersheds that were identified in the consent decree that we've now completed. So we've been looking for ways to have additional funding available to our TMDL work. And every now and again, EPA does. While that standing technical contract is no longer available, they sometimes do have additional money available to support projects. And indeed, a vision project is going to be more likely to be funded. So we've set the Laguna up in that way, specifically to be eligible for any EPA money for technical support. In the meantime, we do have discretionary contract money now set aside for technical support in the Laguna. We had a dry period in which we were unable to get funding to complete our technical work, but we now have funding set aside for that. What it will mean, I think, to develop an alternative restoration plan for the Laguna is, as you say, Chairman Noren, very likely to include a waste load and load allocation for at least one of those pollutants. So, for example, for phosphorus, because that is important to our ongoing permitting with the MPDS dischargers as well as our work with the non-point source dischargers. But we may not be obligated to develop waste load and load allocations for all of the pollutants that are identified as impairing the Laguna. And in that case, what we would rely on are the other implementation, the watershed stewardship and adaptive management framework that we're developing for to apply to the Laguna.
Well, in some ways, too, I think that's appropriate, right? That in some ways, I see something like the Vision Project here out of the federal EPA. I believe that there is likely evolution in the thought of the construct of TMDL here in the first place, right? To build this big model and animal and regulatory process and framework that takes years and years. And when you know far in advance what the impairments are, I believe that there's awareness and realization about what the potential fixes to those could be. Mm-hmm. Certainly looking at the Laguna TMDL has been going, I believe, since I've been here, mm-hmm. 10 years. And that as it is then, the early implementation work that's been done out there, and there's been a lot of really good work out there, yeah. certainly gives at least some credence to the fact that something using something like a vision project and the stewardship approach, that type of approach could be an effective and powerful tool that could actually get work done, boots on the ground, without then having this huge construct of TMDL. Not that it's not needed, but it could actually evolve it further. Board Member Corbett has been bringing this up for the last year or so to look for, you know, kind of alternative implementation to TMDL. And I think that this is going, it looks to me like this is going down that road.
I think that's right. I think it's likely, you know, as I say, we still have, you know, our full analysis to complete, but it's likely that the Laguna, it will be one of those projects that is sort of an amalgam, you know, have a TMDL, as I say, for phosphorus as an example, and an alternative strategy to address the remaining pollutants. The ocean beaches and freshwater streams pathogen TMDL is much more clearly a ideal candidate for an alternative restoration plan without the need to establish load and waste load allocations at all. And if you recall from the workshop on the Russian River pathogen TMDL, you know, the way we establish load and waste load allocations for pathogens is just to apply the concentration limit anyway. So it's no different than just simply relying on the objective.
That's right. And one last thing, too, as far as TMDL goes, this retrospective, the walk down you know, memory lane here and look at TMDLs in the rearview mirror, thank you, sir, is that we have a number of TMDLs in this region that are technical TMDLs that were done by EPA under the consent decree, I believe. Gual is one of them. I believe Lost River is another. And we rely upon things like the temperature policy, the sediment work plan, and other tools that we have in the proverbial toolbox here. I believe that there are watersheds out here that are needing some love. And I would like to request, if this stays as the priority that it is with a retrospective of TMDL, that we look at it through and frame it through, at least in part, through that lens. If there's technical TMDLs that are out here that are not being implemented in an effective way, I want them to be evaluated in that way. That's not to say that the sediment work plan or the temperature policy or other elements of regulatory frameworks that we have engaged here are not being effective. But at the same time, we have a pretty good handful, I believe, of technical TMDL watersheds here that we really don't have that strong framework that's super defined. It's a little bit more nebulous. And I think it's important to look, is that being effective?
Yeah.
Is there other things we should be doing in some of these really important watersheds looking down from here now? Those were done, I believe, before 2010, most all of them were.
Yeah,
and I think they're just kind of they're just kind of hanging out there. And
yeah.
So if we do this, Alita, my request would be that, and I'm not opposed to, you know, the prioritization that it's been proposed here, is that we look at these TMDLs through the true frame of is there a potential for recovery for here given what's happened to these impairments. In a reasonable time frame of an expectation, do we have the right tools in the toolbox?
Mm-hmm.
And if we do that, I would request that you come back to us and with your staff, or our staff, I should say, to report back on that.
Yeah. Well, that is exactly the idea of that project. Just to be clear, you know, that we have something around 20 TMDLs that we've developed over the years. And only a small handful of those have individual action plans, TMDL action plans associated with those. And those watersheds, you know, they include the Garcia, the Scott, and the Shasta, and the Klamath,
mm-hmm.
have all had people dedicated to them, to the implementation of those TMDLs.
That's right.
All of the other TMDLs we've developed, don't have an assigned staff who's stewarding their implementation. And instead what happens is that we implement all of our variety of programs in service to the TMDL. So that means that the timber staff are implementing their program, knowing that when they're in a watershed that's impaired and has a TMDL, we implement the Caltrans permit. We would implement the 5C permit or waiver. National Forest. Yeah. All of those are implemented, recognizing that they're covering activities in an impaired watershed. And the sediment TMDL implementation policy, in particular, says use your existing authorities to address the impairments to achieve water quality standards. So that's what that's primarily what we're looking at, is do we implement our existing programs in a manner that is effectively achieving water quality recovery. And so that's true both for the watersheds that we have individual action plans for, and the action plans may need updating or revising in some way, but also for those that don't, that we're just simply implementing, as you say, somewhat, less focused, in a less focused or clear way, implementing all of our variety of programs.
Yeah, and I think that just needs to be done with our eyes wide open. Right. That we truly evaluate those and report back in a comprehensive manner if things are not being done out there, or we need to take regulatory action or change an action we have out there now. If we expect a timber staff to be doing that on a THP basis, or say even like we have some ownership wide permitting that we have out here that could be done better, different, or maybe just leave it just like it is. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of retrospective that I would expect here, and really a sober look at that. Yeah. To some of these watersheds that we know they're there, we know they have a TMDL, but we just don't hear much about them.
Well, we share your vision, and what I expect will come out of this project is exactly as you've requested, a list of recommendations.
Yeah.
Of what changes to our overall approach we should take, including revisions to individual action plans, individual implementation policies, and perhaps recommendations for permit alterations.
Yeah, or the application of stewardship, because that certainly has been something that has been evolved through the last 10 years, I would say 5 to 10 years, and it's really can prove effective on non-point impairments out here. I think it's incredible the linkages that can be made and some of the power of that. And it does take time. There's no doubt about it. But I think effective regulation is one of the three legs of the stool from which we stand on. Mm-hmm. So let's just make sure that's being effective.
Good. We will.
Corbett, you're chomping at the bit.
Well, I'll be very brief. First, I want to thank you for the presence and the guts to go and evaluate our programs, what's working, what isn't. That's many times absent in government programs, and I think we're going to learn a lot about it. So I really appreciate that effort. The second of all, my definition of the EPA visioning is, instead of going through this very cumbersome and formal process, are there ways we can solve the problem in the interim that are pretty quick, pretty simple, pretty fast, and a little bit... we're running into the challenge of watershed analysis, and it tends to be limited amounts of data in some ways, a wisp in one way or the other in the model. Then decision makers have to make decisions having very large economic consequences, and generally boards feel uncomfortable doing that. Now, we're lucky we're not fishery people, because we're all wimps. They will. They did a tuna study on the U.S. industry, which was only 5% of the industry. They only did it on 5%, and they did it for 2 years. And they had to make a decision what they're going to do with tuna, and it put a lot of people out of business. But if you're not forced to go there, don't go there. Bays and estuaries blew up on San Francisco Bay on the same kind of causation and complex issues that we've run into. The whole... Dickey Act was originally on capacity. It was rejected as on these same issues. And the same thing with the Federal Water Pollution Control Act. So it's not a rocket scientist that we're having problems. Everybody who's taken that approach has had a problem. What's amazing is how well we've done with the TMDL, despite some of these huge structural differences. And that's a record we ought to be very proud of. But I really think the approach, if you look at the time and you look at the resources and you look at the money, how can we fix this? And as EPA says, if you fix it, then you don't even worry about the TMDL. If you can't fix it, then you start considering it in greater depth. Mm-hmm. And I just think that's the way to go. There's quite a bit of literature in the forestry areas on BMP approaches, which we're already doing. And again, they're dealing with the same complexity of projection issues that we've dealt with, and they're dealing with the same uncomfortableness of boards making decisions with that high a level of uncertainty. And so instead of us whining about it, what can we do about it? What we can do is try and figure out how to solve problems. So I think I'm impressed at how quick you, because you've invested a lot in the TMDL program, you made them great successes, have a great record, that you're as willing as you are to look at what are other systems that we can benefit by using. And so I really appreciate that.
Great. Well, thank you for that. I did want to follow up with a point that comes from what you've just said, which is that we do, and I think the sediment TMDL implementation policy is evidence of the conclusion that we drew early on that, you know, as an agency, we know how to solve many of these problems. We have enough experience in the woods to understand what it is that generates erosion and how to go about solving it. The same is true, and so that concept applies in this idea of an alternative restoration plan, that we know pretty well what it is that we need to do to actually solve the problem. We can, with relative alacrity, establish the restoration plan and put it into action. But your point is well taken, that we have to check and see whether it actually works. And that, you know, on the one hand, where that's what we're doing as part of the TMDL retrospective review. On the other hand, with respect to the alternative restoration plan approach, if we're unable to demonstrate success with a non-TMDL alternative restoration plan, we're not out of our obligation to develop a TMDL. We'll have to come back and develop it.
And so, I do want to say it also may put a pressure on the board that the second you make things more flexible, then you have to be wiser in using the flexibility and make sure that we're doing our underlying job of cleaning things up, which isn't always very popular. Being a cop isn't very popular. So I do want to say I think this approach does put greater responsibilities on board members, probably does with staff as well. But I just don't see us getting done any other way. And so I really appreciate, like I said, you've followed the EPA visioning process. They've been dealing with this since about 2013. We're hitting it. And then also, the history of TMDL is the history of money. No one cared about 303D. No one designated watersheds until there was money for watershed planning. Mm-hmm. That money's drying up, and that ought to be assigned to us. We're probably going to go back to administering the Porter-Cologne Act and the Federal Act, much as we were before there was money in 303D, and that is we were having to use some of these alternative methods, although we've advanced a lot. So
yeah, thank you.
I just think you have been impressive on opening the door and having a considered review.
Thank you.
Alita, I'm sorry. To give you my opinion before we close the subject.
No, absolutely. We have some public speakers, by the way, too.
I think your work is excellent. I think the work of all the staff is excellent. I think the challenge to managing hours on projects is never ending. And I think a tool in your toolbox to protect waters, pristine waters, is the ONRW. And I'd say leave it in. Just flesh it out and manage the program excellently as you have others.
Thank you.
Can I go this way first? Sure. Ms. Quintel.
I realized I have one more question, and that is, after I got on my soapbox about being ambitious, this kind of swings the other direction. In the draft staff report, I was interested in the Russian River Watershed TMDL alternative item, and I'm just curious, it looks like it's a high priority, but it's not listed in the work plan. Is that because it's dependent on getting funding for an additional staff position?
Yes. Obviously, there's been a lot of activity in the Russian River, especially since the fires. There's been a lot of watershed scale interest. There's James Gore's Confluence effort. There is the Cal Forward Department of Water Resources pilot project. And then there's just multiple very actively engaged stakeholders in the Russian River watershed. So we've done the best that we can to have staff available for all of the variety of meetings and to participate and provide our opinion on all of the variety of initiatives. But what we really need to be able to do that work effectively is a Russian River watershed steward. And so we are hunting up money and a position to be able to hire that steward. And thus far have not yet been able to come up with it. It is a high priority in that we're cobbling together a number of people who are, as a team, going to the variety of meetings and trying to coordinate with one another. But we would really advance our ability to do work effectively in the Russian River if we had that steward.
Thank you. And in follow-up to that, I would just say there's the work plan table at the end, that attachment one. And in my experience, a lot of the time, once something like this is adopted, that summary piece is kind of where you go to refer back to. So if you can figure out an appropriate way to work it in, it might be nice to include that as kind of a footnote line that's a funding dependent priority. So when you have this table that's listing all the high priorities, that one is in the mix, but noted as funding dependent.
Brilliant. Thank you. That's a great suggestion.
Thanks.
Board Member Gant.
I had a question on number four in the ranking, the climate change. Is the reason it's that far down because, of course, it's going to generate the guidelines that kind of guide us through everything that we do? Is it down as four just because it'll be done in 1920?
What we'll have done in a couple of years is the landscape assessment. And so we won't have a policy to bring to you, but we'll have a landscape of assessment, which we believe will be offer the basis for making better permitting recommendations and provide technical assistance to our disadvantaged communities and have perhaps recommendations for policy if one seems necessary. The order of these projects primarily comes from 2014. And so in the end, it strikes me that their order on the table is not all that critical because these are the projects that we have staff assigned to. And so we assign the best qualified staff to each of the projects, and that's how we proceed. Some of the projects happen more quickly. Others of them take a longer time. So I just simply followed the order as they came to me from 2014. If it matters to any of you to see this in a different order, I am fully open to suggestions. Their completion, their expected completion date, maybe is a factor in how they're ordered. I would leave that to you for your recommendation.
Yeah, I was just thinking that until we have a policy and we understand the climate change impact, that impacts everything above it. So I've always used these tables when you hand these up to upper management. When they go, okay, we're cutting your budget, they start at the bottom, and they start hacking from the bottom up. So mm-hmm. I think it's very important that they are in the ranking of if our budget starts getting cut and you start slashing off these rows, mm-hmm. that we have the least important stuff at the bottom and we work our way up.
Mm-hmm.
Just that defines where our money goes.
I don't know that I have ranked them in this draft work plan in an order that reflects what I think of their funding priority, but I will say that they are ranked in the order of our current investment. So the ones on the bottom of the list are ones that we have not yet invested staff time into, or not significant staff time yet.
So there's a possibility that something like, for example, eight is actually more important than three and should be moved up.
That's not a great example, but yes, it is possible.
Okay.
It is possible.
So we need to look at those and make sure they are in importancy ranked, not investment ranked.
The whole point of this workshop and our written public comment period is to get feedback on that sort of thing. And so I'd very much appreciate your thinking on what the right priority ranking is.
You got homework. 2 points of clarification, Alita. When do you expect this to come back? This is a workshop. Is there a second workshop and the potential adoption date out here for us to go through and adopt the triennial review?
Yes, that would be September 6th.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very good. I have some speaker cards, but the last thing I'd like to suggest here is that these policy statements, you've been bold to put some policy statements in here.
Yeah.
And now, between now and September 6th, I think we ought to, I don't think there's anything that precludes us from talking amongst ourselves and getting some policy statements. You're really, these are board policy statements, I believe, is how you serve these. Mm-hmm. I think we ought to potentially work on these. And policy statements. As I stated, I believe they ought to be based on legal fact first, policy, and then vision going forward, because I think that's kind of the evolution to kind of keep it clean that way. I thank you for putting those in there.
Sure.
It's a very good start.
Sure. And it just for further explanation, each of the topics are divided into a findings section, and those findings refer back to other key documents, so the state board's resolution, the governor's declaration. And then the resolution part, which are just a little, more succinct sort of conclusions on the topic. So I would accept your feedback on any of that.
Great. Well, speaking of feedback, let's take some speaker cards.
Perfect.
Thank you, Alita, very much. We'll have you back up in a minute. Let's start with Brenda Edelman. Vivian Hollowell is going to be after. Donna, can you please start the clock so we just be cognizant of time?
Brenda Edelman, Russian River Watershed Protection Committee. I haven't had a lot of time to work on this particular issue, so my comments aren't terribly well informed, except based on my prior experience. And it appears to me to be an excellent document and very well done. There were three items I thought of on the way over here and came to discover that they are actually in the document, so I don't have to say anything about them. I want to comment on what Mr. Guisti brought up, the idea of starting the definition of the wet weather season and the fact that it's by date instead of by water availability and flow. And I want to mention something that I don't know if any of you were around this board when I started back in the mid-80s, prior to approximately 1986 or 87, there Santa Rosa had a requirement that although the discharge season started on October 1st and ended on May 15th, they could not start any discharges till the river was 1,000 CFS. And it was discontinued when Santa Rosa began to upgrade their system, and they got, instead of secondary, they went up to tertiary, and the requirement was eliminated. So you might want to revisit that. I always thought it was a good idea to keep it, and I said so, but it didn't happen. I'm a little concerned about this alternative plan. I think we're all aware of the reputation of the EPA right now, and I just have to throw it in here. It may be inappropriate to say, but I'm concerned if this is some kind of way to make an end run around legal requirements, and that if you establish phosphorus as the one legal requirement for the Laguna, for instance, what happens to all of the others in the event that this alternative doesn't provide the protection that we were hoping it would? And I don't know if someone has an answer to that or not, but I did want to put it out there that it was a concern. And I may have other comments to come, but I think basically Alita has done an excellent job. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Brenda. Vivian Hollowell. I have one last speaker card for Tito Sasaki to follow. Good morning, Vivian.
Well, hello.
Good to see you.
It's good to see all of you again. It's been a little while. Vivian Hollowell, Watershed Conservation Director of Pacific Coast Federation of Fishermen's Associations, a coastwide group of family fishing businesses. We want to thank you for the effort that you've put into this document. It's been very thoroughly developed. However, we'd like to request that the board prioritize actions that will lead to the protection and restoration of listed salmon species and aid the fishermen and the communities that depend on them. This would include more concentrated focus on the North Coast region, as it is the last viable stronghold for many species of salmon and the salmon way of life, and a focus of non-point pollution, including flow impairments. Protection of human health and ESA-listed species are listed as top priorities. However, important issues such as agricultural pollution, impoundments, and toxins are not prioritized in any way. And other key actions such as protection of in-stream flows and flow standards are absolutely essential to the survival of North Coast salmon species and protection of human health in the North Coast region, but they're not given the priority that they deserve. So we would suggest the following changes, and we will follow this with written comments.
Great.
So briefly, priority of protection of in-stream flows and the setting of flow standards, including the Scott, the South Fork, Trinity, Main Stem Eel, be added to the list of priority watersheds. That the regulation of agricultural discharges and creation of waste discharge requirements or agricultural waivers in key salmon areas be a high priority item. That the assessment of and identification of toxins and their impacts on fish and drinking water sources be added as a priority. We still have a huge sediment problem in these impaired North Coast rivers. They're continuing to dump more mud into the mud bowl. In the Eureka Plain, for example, the board is still permitting additional sediment to be discharged into the bay, and it's still creating safety hazards for neighborhoods, for fishing navigation. And if we don't get the bay dredged this year, we've already moved our boats, and so has the Coast Guard, all the way down to the end of the marina. We're having to pay for this externalized cost of doing business upstream. So we need to get some, we support, you know, alternative restoration, such as an assertive restoration program on roads and timberlands, such as that handbook that I gave you from DWR last year, David.
Still have it, Vivian.
A historic document from your own organization.
Yep.
In fact, sediment from roads is actually equivalent to a point discharge. That was the dissenting opinion of arch conservative and Anthony Scalio at when roads sediment was being considered by the Supreme Court. His dissenting opinion was they're actually a point source because they discharge directly to the streams, and everybody knows this. We'd like you to coordinate with the state groundwater programs, and we support the staff's focus on biostimulatory substances, toxic algae included, the wetland riparian protection policy, and reassessing the effectiveness of these TMDLs, especially where they've been continually voluntary. We appreciate your work on this, and we'll be happy to elaborate in some written comments.
Looking forward to that, Vivian. Thank you
very much.
Thank you for coming today. Mr. Tito Sasaki is my last speaker card.
Good Good morning. My name is Tito Sasaki of Sonoma County Farm Bureau. And I'm very glad to see that you and your staff are including in the Basin Plan this TMDL retrospective review and allocating a decent amount of staff time to that. If it is done properly, this would be the best way to make substantial improvements on the TMDL programs. And for that purpose, I would be happy if the staff made some periodic progress report on this effort and provided the opportunity for public input as the project goes along in the coming 3 years, and to make sure that the opportunity will be used to the best possible way. But I do congratulate you for bringing this retrospective review into the Basin Plan. And a separate matter, just a minor question I had was in the relation with the climate change. The statement says, identify opportunity to reduce methane emission. I was a little bit concerned about that in relation to the dairy industry. And isn't that something that should be left to the Air Quality Control Board, or is there any reason why Water Quality Control Board should get involved in the methane emission?
That is a good question, Mister.
Okay, just a question.
I know, Tito, that say like St. Vincent's had a digester out there at one time, and I can envision that, you know, the digesting of manure products. In fact, I think there was a pilot project that was envisioned, if I recall, within the last 5 years, I believe, by Sonoma County. It might have been the Clean Power, or it might have been actually the Water Agency, to use digestion of some of the animal waste products. Not necessarily, I don't recall if it was for a climate protection standpoint or if it was for energy conversion, but it's a very good question.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you very much. Alita, would you please visit us again? First, I think that, you know, you've laid out a program here. This is a workshop. It sounds like that there are several months hence that we will have that where public comment is public comment accepted until what point? It's open
June,
now?
June 22nd. Close okay. The business on June 22nd.
Okay, so June 22nd for anybody that wants to provide written comments, please. Vivian, you'd express that. Please do. Always interested in your comments. And then we have potentially an adoption, sounds like early September.
That's right.
I think you've got kind of a round of comments here at this point in time that are, I believe, constructive and well thought. Thank you for a well thought document here and a plan going forward. And we'll take this on. By the way, is there any other board comment or questions here? See none?
I was going to make. So we talked about us getting together to do the resolution statements and work on priorities. Should we do that at the July meeting and do it? Otherwise, that's the only way we're all together to do that. And we can't do it offline.
How about we do this? Matt, may I suggest that we kind of think about this before we jump in and start doing that?
Sure.
Why don't we think about it for a bit, and maybe you can maybe come back to us, because it was proposed, again, as I see it, as you develop these as potential board statements, which, again, I think is good. I think that's good. At the same time, if we're going to make a statement, I believe it we ought to then take that on in some form. And July meeting may be appropriate, but let's think about that for a minute. And then we could just disseminate maybe from Matt some suggestions about how we could do so.
Sounds good.
And go from there.
Okay, excellent. Thank you.
Thank you, Alita. Okay, we have a closed session and lunch. When would we potentially come back, Matt?
Well, so actually our invited speaker, Mark Estrada, is here.
Okay.
And so one option is to just roll right into going back to item 5, and then we can break and have lunch and do closed session during the lunch hour.
That sounds potentially great. If we're going to do that, why don't we take just a quick break, get everybody fresh? How long do you expect item 5 to go? Do you have any idea?
Mr. Puget and Mr. Marcus, what's your estimation of the length of the presentation?
Beautiful. Okay. So why don't we come back then and let's just do a five-minute break, and we'll make it a quick. It'll probably go a little longer, but let's just try to gather back here, and then we'll go forward and get her done. Thank you so much. All right, Mr. Jeremiah Puget.